Portland for Wednesday, July the 8th to order. And today we're going to change the agenda around. It's still going to be the same agenda, but we're going to turn the order because we have one commissioner that's going to be late arriving.
Hey, missed the ferry out of Edmonds and thought it'd be here maybe 10:15, 10:20. I thought it'd be, since we've got the commercial use of the ramp on the afternoon agenda too, yeah, we can catch them up on that, but I'd like to have them here for any budget discussion. So anyway, well, I just handed out, and actually both of you have seen this already, is just a proposed, contract or whatever, sign up, if you're a commercial boat or a buyer, asking for the typical information that we get from folks. And the amounts of money down at the bottom, I just threw those in there. That's obviously something that is going to be approved by the commission. And Jim and I are just talking, we want to have this the same for the boat itself and for the buyer, or you want two different rates, and how are we going to enforce it and monitor it?
Now, when you say the boat, you're talking about the commercial boat?
If somebody comes in with a boat on a trailer,
mm-hmm.
with the intent to go out and fish commercially with it, uses the ramp to launch it and retrieve it.
Well, to unload product, that's the big thing.
And unload,
they'll be down there for an hour with their hand truck pulling up crab off the ramp. So,
or like sea cucumbers we saw the other night.
Yeah. So it'd be that type of boat activity. Some of those people might not launch here. Some of those people may come from another area and just unload here. So.
And that's why they put the launch ramp and or facility. They're using our facilities, whether it's just the docks and the parking lot, whatever, for commercial purposes. And is that something we want to allow, or allow with a fee, or not allow? Or now the other issue, and Jim and I were talking again, most of this activity is private, at least anecdotally, from what we see. Every in-water permit that we have to get, whether it's the boat ramp, the breakwater, Point Hudson, fixing CD dock, anything else, the tribes kind of hold the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
They have to approve everything. And they can really, really slow down a permit. And so that's kind of the other side of this edge of the sword is, we got to just politically be careful of
right.
putting ourselves in a position where we're making some of the tribal members not happy. And the next time we go in for a permit, suddenly what we thought was going to be a year-long permit turns into a three-year permit.
Yeah, I've been giving this a lot of thought. I went fishing in Nia Bay last week and was staying at the Cove Motel, and there's a guy named Frank that runs it for the Macaw Indians. And I asked him about who it was that went to North of Falcon to do the salmon setting seasons, because the Macaw Nation as a tribe had heard that Area 9, our area here, was going to be closed down for salmon this year. And that would have happened at the North of Falcon process, which would have been a huge economic blow to the entire area, except that the Macaw Nation said, well, let's give them 1,000 fish off of their quota. And they did that, and then the Department of Fish and Wildlife allowed Area 9 to have a season. So that was, to my mind, I thank Frank, I found out it was Frank that was the one that did that. And I thanked him profusely and said that, it's not just me thanking you, it's all the business owners and stuff in Area 9 that are now going to be able to have a salmon season to rely on. And so in that light, I've been discovering that working with the Macaw and the Jamestown Squalum has been very fruitful. We have just a few, and I want to continue to nourish that cooperativeness instead of start putting up barriers. Having talked to the guys that are my initial concern was not really the boats going in and out. I mean, there's a lot of them, but then there's a lot of fishing boats on fishing days too. My concern was the commercial buyers. They're the ones that had, last time I was here, there were six big box trucks, they were just parked all over the place, and they'd back down the ramp and they'd fill up the boats. My concern was, there's a little bit of revenue to be had, probably, because those guys are making a lot of money on this. We don't want, in my mind, we don't want to curtail the income that the individual Native Americans get from theirs. So I'm thinking that the boats themselves could be just like any other, you know.
Just have a regular pass.
But have the buyers be the ones that put the permit, because they're the ones that are directly making the big dollars off of this thing. And then they're the ones, frankly, that we're trying to organize, so they're not such a wide open rodeo. And so I'm thinking that it would be worthwhile, in my mind, to figure out, you know, what we want to do. But then, before we actually institute these things, so that we don't put up these barriers by saying, this is what we decided here in Port Townsend, you guys live with it, I'd like to take it on the road and go talk. And I'd be happy to volunteer to do this individually with all of the tribes that actually have rights to use this ramp.
And that was Jim's concern this morning, that we should probably reach out and, you know, explain what the issue is. And, you know, it impacts, you know, really their boats too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these buyers
right.
block the ramp and take a little bit slower than just doing a slam bam,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever number there is.
Wow. Thinking along the same lines here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did quite a bit of research, and there's not a lot of ramps in Puget Sound that charge commercial fees. Back on the East Coast, though, they're all over, especially in New England, they all have commercial fees, and they're pretty exorbitant, you know, they're, you know, $500 or more and that sort of thing. So.
Well, every time I've spoken with the guys in the box trucks, they've all been sitting there saying, we'd be happy to pay. You don't have anything for us to pay. You don't have a fee. You don't have it. You know, we don't know what to do. There's no regulations. So I don't think it's going to be really fought that much. They realize that they're taking a huge, well, monopolizing the parking lot, essentially, and that they're getting all their income from it, so they expect to pay. But I think that rather than just saying, here, we should take it on the road and talk to them and get and have them help us figure out, I find it's often funny when I might go in thinking that I want to pay so much for something, and I'll ask the guy, what do you think it's worth? And he'll come up with a lot higher price. And like, oh, well, I wasn't going to ask that much for it, but sure, I'll take that. And so we just ask them what they think the worth is to be able to utilize this ramp and have buyers come here, and how much would you think to be able to protect the access here and actually improve it by having an extra lane, and let them be part of the process. And I realize that means talking to a lot of tribes, but I'd be happy to volunteer my time.
I think that Sue's contact at the No Point Treaty would be a great person to
right.
kind of spearhead that, because
mm-hmm.
that's five tribes that he
right.
represents, and
mm-hmm.
that could be a good entree.
Yep.
And the buyers are mostly not from the tribes, are they?
Well, that's just it.
It's hard to have the voice. Some of the, most of the trucks aren't even labeled.
No.
You know, they're just kind of like an old U-Haul truck that was sold and bought used. You can still see the...
I don't know if they're tribal buyers. I mean, I think they're just commercial.
Well, actually, a lot of the people that I've spoken with were tribal members in the buyer trucks. You know, they were... One guy was... Yeah, he's from Suquamish, I think, and said, "Well, are you buying for a company?" "Well, I'm buying crap. I couldn't really get who for, so I'm thinking it's one of those things where you just decide that I don't have a boat, but I don't want to get in the commercial industry. I can go buy them and then haul them someplace and sell them." So I'm not sure.
Well,
that's really
that's the other specter that I thought of is, you know, there's some illegal buying and selling going on out here.
And so I think that it would be useful to regulate, not really, to organize it, to understand it, and to and the money, I don't think is going to be that big. I mean, there'll be some revenue, but yeah, it could be a little bit.
According to the Department of Fish and Wildlife website, a commercial buyer is supposed to have a commercial buying license,
right?
Yeah, that they, you know, pay a fairly healthy amount of money for it, so. So.
Since that's on the agenda for when Pete's here, I guess we can re-talk that this afternoon, right? What do you think, Brad?
I think that's a good idea. Pete's here, just go over it again, there's no point in rehashing this thing to death this morning and this afternoon.
And as far as, you know, when I first did this form, I had a monthly rate instead of a daily rate, but then you got to start looking at how would we enforce it. If you do a monthly, then does that mean we're going to have 12 different colored stickers to hand out or, you know, that sort of thing? And we thought probably just a daily and an annual would be the easiest to go.
Well, my thought would be a daily rate and an annual rate, not a monthly rate. And then I think what we could possibly do with that is I think if we just had, well, I don't know. I guess we need to find out more about how it actually works. Because like I said, we don't really understand. I was trying to get an appointment with Rich Childers to actually explore who it is that can buy and can't buy. And I know that they've indicated a desire to be here to process tickets because what happened last year and what potentially could have happened this year is that so much crap gets pulled out before and they've exceeded their quota, so they're interested in having someone to check fish tickets instead of, if they could do it on a daily basis, instead of waiting for them to get turned in somewhere and sent back, they could be on top of it. So I'm going to talk with Rich and see if I can figure out how it actually works better. It's all, you know, tribes, and we don't really have access to a lot of that information. So.
I've never seen any Fish and Wildlife enforcement here when the buyers all seem to be here. Mm-hmm. They always park right in that first parking space when the recreational people are here. And they're checking their people, call the boat back out.
Well, the tribal, they're self-enforcing, right?
Yeah, see, the way I understand it is that it's supposedly co-managed, which means that the state Fish and Wildlife manages the state part and the tribes manage their part. The only thing that crosses over is that the fish tickets have to come from the tribes to know how much is being put into the commercial sector. And so that's where the Fish and Wildlife gets a chance to count them. But they don't really have any jurisdiction over saying, stop, you've exceeded, or anything like that. That's the co-managed part. So I think it's within the... I know that this is something that the fishing community has been asking the Fish and Wildlife to do, is to maintain more accurate and more timely counts so that quotas could be monitored more carefully. So I think it would be, but I haven't had a chance to talk to Rich. I've actually not got
to get Rich down here and just meet with him.
Yeah.
See what he says. All right. Still short of commissioner.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and start the budget discussion then. Nothing really formal except for one handout, but we just wanted to get our heads thinking right. And the first thing Abby's handing out is the projected calendar, you know, ending up with adoption, you know, November. By regulation, we have to have this all wrapped up before 1 December.
Thank you.
And it gives us a chance, you know, to do the public hearing and, if need be, a second public hearing at the end. We had a similar thing last year. And probably do that adoption on November 11th. But we still would have... one more meeting after that as a backup. It's essentially all of our workshops, and you see in here, you know, we're, and I've already alerted the various supervisors and managers, you know, Larry, Ozzie, Tammy, Terry, et cetera, to start getting their information together and their needs and wants. And so we'll be meeting several times with them. Now you notice the CIP, it really should be CFP, Capital Facilities Plan, is crossed out. And that's something I want to make sure we're all on the same sheet of music. Harold, in fact, I might as well hand this out now. This is the latest from Harold, our engineer on Point Hudson. We just got that yesterday. And we met with Harold on Monday, and he's starting to do the boat haven. Primarily the buildings that we own, and some of the other infrastructure, et cetera. Hopefully we'll have, we're trying to push to have most of the information in September. But to do a true capital facilities plan, Eric has got a sample from the port of, what is it, Newport? On their capital plan that he would like to kind of use as a model to put ours together. There's no requirement to adopt the capital plan at the same time you adopt your operating budget. And I would recommend that, you know, we have no wiggle room on the operating budget. It's got to be adopted in November. But on the capital plan, let's see what we've got. I would suspect we're going to need to go back and have Harold recheck some things if we need more detail. We'll need a chance to sit down with Larry Ozzie. And I can just see October, November, and December being used up pretty quickly. And I think if we could shoot for January to have a formal capital facilities plan that we can actually look at, have a couple of touches and adopt, I think we'll be doing pretty good. The only issue, and it depends on Harold, you know, if he comes back and says, hey, you know, the roof on building number 14, that needs to be replaced within a year, and we may want to cherry pick a couple of capital maintenance projects out of that to put into our operating budget. And I think that would be pretty easy to do, as we should have that information September, October timeframe. So that's kind of my thoughts on that one area. I don't want to discuss that at all.
Well, so on the capital facilities plan, I mean, how much money you put into that is going to be an integral part of the budget. So how can you do that?
The capital facilities plan is, you know, replacement of the roofs at Point Hudson, you know,
right,
is looking out 15, 20 years. That's got nothing to do with our operating budget.
And essentially next year we have one capital project, and that's the breakwater. Mm-hmm. We can do some maintenance, capital maintenance things, but we're not going to have a lot of money to be putting into maintenance.
Yeah, well, it's the CD docks, it's the rest of the Sperry building, it's the coal seam facility and infrastructure. All that's going to be in the out years. Unless, like I said, Harold comes back and, you know, says here's two or three things that need to be done next year, you know, for life safety or whatever. So.
So we're going to have an August workshop also.
Mm-hmm.
That's, well, I mean, in August 26th, there's two workshops
yeah.
in August. So this, we're going to have a workshop on the evening meeting one, too? Because the August 26th would be the second meeting. And
that should
usually
be
the evening meeting.
Regular meeting.
What's that?
August 26th, that's our regular meeting, isn't it?
Right, but it's an
oh,
evening
it's a
meeting.
Oh, it's 9:30,
yeah, it's an evening meeting. That's usually a. Yeah. So we're going to have a 9:30 workshop and then an evening meeting also?
Or should we have an early
workshop? We'll just do the one workshop each month, which will be the
12th earlier.
The early, the second, yeah.
So then we should cross out the August 26th
yeah.
workshop session.
But we might put it on the regular agenda for that mm-hmm. night. And one of the, you know, we do this every year. Even if we don't have a lot to discuss, I kind of like to put a placeholder on the agenda just because it's a public meeting, and if somebody, some citizen wants an opportunity to speak to the commission, it brings it up, you know. And
mm-hmm.
then when we're ready to adopt it, and somebody says, well, how come you, you know, this is the first I've heard about it. And they say, well, we had 15 meetings, so. And of course, October, mid-October, we've got to advertise it for 2 weeks before you hold a public hearing, so. So we'll clean that up and put it in your boxes.
Okay.
Some of the other items, you know, last year we spent a lot of time on the format, changing the format. Are we okay with this format to use it again? Well, it's the thought, now's the time to...
I'm only new.
We might change some of the photographs, although these are pretty nice photographs. Plus, we ought to give the photographer credit somewhere in there, too.
Who was the photographer?
Me. So, that's good. You need to start thinking about taxes. We took the bank capacity last year, so there is no bank capacity. So your only option is take the 1% authorized under law or not. And just a reminder, we get about $900,000 in property tax, so 1% is about $9,000. And right now, I'm of a mind to recommend that we do take it, but we all should keep in mind that that's not going to be the solution to anything. All rates and fees, we need to review those and ask ourselves, you know, do we hold them as they are? We did some increases, especially in the yard last year, for the first time in many, many years. Do we want to let that sit for another year? Do you want to do a CPI type increase across the board? Do you want to, you know, pick and choose certain rates and fees to modify up or down? Do you want us to, and right now CPI checked yesterday, the June numbers aren't out yet. So it's only, they do it every 2 months. And for February and April, it's running a little under 1% right now, CPI. Don't know if that'll continue through the year or not. And of course, all of our leases have a CPI increase, which will be done automatically. Does the commission want staff to run some projections? You know, mortgage rate, you know, CPI plus 1%, you know, other rates and fees.
Well, I've always been a firm believer that the cost centers, the rates and fees should be commensurate with the cost centers' expenses, whether it be ramps, mortgage, yard.
I know. Well, you're not for election this coming year, so you're okay, I guess. Yeah, and it's, and I think we probably need to run some numbers, not just for the commission, but for ourselves. I don't think we can charge enough in most of the cost centers to.
Unlikely not, that. But I just, I meant from a standpoint of, you know, at least identifying that.
Right, we, you know, just our due diligence.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you know, on behalf of the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so let's work up some numbers and just show you what, you know, what the delta is now, what a CPI would do, and that sort of thing. And
maybe a, you know, a goal-oriented type of study.
And it might be, and again, you've mentioned it several times, Steve, we had lunch there, one of the WPPA conferences, Edmonds Commission, or two of them, and they're just ending a five-year mortgage rate increase of CPI plus 1%. And I noticed in the Daily News day before yesterday, Port Angeles hired a consultant, and that was their recommendation, you know, to try to at least move towards recapturing the cost of operating the facility and some of the deferred maintenance. And you're seeing that all around Puget Sound, especially in marinas. It was all built back in the 60s and 70s, and they were all, it was insane.
And one thing I like about that, and I'd like to have that be some of the projections we show for how it would look to the customers, but one thing I like about that is it gives people a predictable, you know, it's not going to be, oh, surprise, next year you're going to be really high or whatever. And what brings to mind is Sean and Inger, when they were in the, what do you call it, limited access moorage. We hadn't raised theirs for a few years and suddenly had to catch them back up. And also, whoa, here's a big increase. That wasn't fair. I think we should make sure that everyone has a predictable bankable. You know, they can understand how much it's going to be. And so they can say, you know, I can still afford this, or no, I can't.
Right. So I think that's still be some unpredictability, because the CPI is hard to predict. You know, it's been really low the last couple of years, but it wasn't too many years ago when it was running 4% and 5%. And if you go back far enough, it was double-digit inflation. You know, but that's quite a while ago. But I've seen some port commissions where they've done a formula like that, but they'll cap the CPI, you know, say at 3% or something like that, so you don't get a big jump. The danger with that is if, in fact, inflation is running that high, that means our costs at the port are going up by that amount, too. So when you cap it, you fall further behind. And that leads me into the other thing. We need to provide the commission with some known and expected increases in our costs. We told you last time that we just got notified that PERS, we have to pay an extra 1.9% for each of our employees, and that started on 1 July. So we're already messing with the 2015 budget with an unexpected increase of cost that we didn't know last year, because they hadn't increased PERS for a couple of years. But Donna was saying that that equates to about $17,000. You know, that's a new cost that hadn't been on the books.
Which I got an update on that this morning. It's more like 21.
More like 21?
Yeah.
Let's see. We're talking about this on staff meeting yesterday. Everything we're seeing on medical, there's wild predictions of 20 to 40% increase on medical. And, we have our regular insurance premiums. You know, they're going to go up. I could see easily another $50,000 of increases in our cost. And, you know, where's that money going to come from, kind of a thing?
Plus, there's the Ross study to consider.
And that's there's next bullet here.
The Ross study.
That's the
salary
next,
survey.
The salary. That's my next bullet. Salary survey should be addressed, whether any action is taken or not. Mm-hmm. And we need to discuss various options. And I'll tell you right now, if we were to get everybody up to just average based on a survey, it'd break the bank in 1 year.
But just like the Cabot Facilities Plan for, you know, looking at long-term, perhaps there's a way that we can craft a long-term
plan. That's what the commission did with the last one back in 2009. They phased it in over 3 years, and were able to take, you know, bites of it. And I think just from a morale standpoint, we need to do something in a positive way. But what that final answer is, I don't know.
There's a perception out there that the CPI increase is generating a lot of money, but it's just simple math. $3 million in revenue is what we take in operation. And CPI is $30,000. So we've already spent more than that in just insurance. So we're going to lose ground if we just do CPI increases.
Modern world.
Let's see, what else did I write down here in the cheat sheet?
We already talked about the capital facilities plan. We probably should look at our level of service in all our facilities. Are we okay with the way they are? Do we want to see if we can get some savings there? The number of weekends that we have more staff on duty, things like that. You know, when we bring on our summer hire, Is there any savings there?
So what would be another
number of times we cut the grass at the airport?
Okay.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see a list of things that, you know, would entail level of service reductions that could be made without having to close our doors, you know, and so we can kind of prioritize or see if we might feel that something is needed that other people don't. It might not be that valued to a lot of the folks.
Well, I'd really like to see a list that's, you know, discretionary spending that could include, you know, travel, going to various events, the boat show, for example, you know, anything that possibly we could look at, you know, some, you know, type of cost savings. I think it would be, we really need to have a list specifically created that, that perhaps we could save some money and shave off a little bit here and there.
I looked at 2014 on travel, and we actually came in about $3,000 under budget. And right now we're under budget for this year. But, we certainly should look at those and can. But again, it's not going to be a panacea. You know, we're talking a couple of $1,000s here or there.
Well, but as I was asking earlier, if, for example, if the boat show, which when you factor in the wages and whatnot, is like $12,300 for that alone, if that is incorporated into travel, then that number for the travel does not include salaries and wages.
It's in travel? Do you know where the boat show expenses are?
I'm not sure if it's all in travel.
You can find out where we're putting that.
Yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, what was the budget, like $25,000 for travel? And I mean,
it was $17,000 last year. We spent $14,000.
Isn't that under promotion part of that?
I don't know where Amy put it. So.
Advertising here for the yard. $13,000 for 2015.
Isn't there a consolidated statement that has all that added up?
Under the consolidated advertising is $54,000 for 2015, and
I'm looking on page 17.
Yeah, it's where $25,000.
$25,000 for travel and
for
training.
Travel and training.
So that number must not include salaries and wages.
No, because we don't know who's going to travel and who's going to what training and that sort of thing. But we can take a look at that. But philosophically, I guess what I'm hearing, at least from Brad, is a little bit of a hard line to at least be willing to look at some uncomfortable numbers.
I think we need to.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncomfortable numbers to look at. For example, a huge expense that we've been incurring is maintaining a boatyard permit. And that's in all the stormwater stuff we've been doing. And that's a lot of money. And
it's money that we weren't spending 5 years ago.
Exactly.
We weren't required to.
So there's a couple of things we need to do. Like we're going to be asking the tribes to contribute to, you know, some boat ramp stuff. We could maybe be asking tailgaters or independent contractors to contribute to stuff that supports them. That's one thing. And then another thing, I was going to use this in my commissioner comments in the afternoon meeting, but Al and I went to Port Angeles to look at their little ponds they have. And I'm thinking that there'd be a bit of a capital expense. I'm not sure how much. I'm still working on some numbers on that, but I'm thinking that we could reduce our annual operating expenses for pumps and filters and media and stuff like that, and reduce our exposure to benchmark exceedances by going to a different type of thing. That it's one of those where you spend a little bit up front, but then you save the long term. So there's some things like that that could also go towards reducing some of our expenses, I think.
I think it would be a little bit more than a little bit up front, though.
Well, if you looked at the size of what they had at Port Angeles, I don't think it's that big. I mean,
we had a far bigger yard than they had.
Right. Theirs was as big as like two hot tubs, you know. It wasn't very big. So the one that we saw in Vancouver was pretty small, and it was a way bigger yard than ours. So there's a lot of things we can look at. I guess that putting together a list that includes a lot of like off-the-wall ways of thinking about it. For example, I understand that Eric's drafting a thing for putting some agricultural, the airport land into agriculture. That's a little bit of money coming in. A little bit could add, if it's going the right direction, help.
I just don't see any magic bullets out there. We need to cut costs. Probably not save a whole lot. We've got to be careful that we don't cut costs to a point where there's level of service or travel to where we suddenly are losing money because we weren't there to capture the grant money, or we're losing customers. You know, we went past that tipping point where by not having somebody in the office, you know, you suddenly lost more money than you're saving by, you know, having the overtime. But I think we're going to be faced, talking to Ozzy and Terry, yeah, we've got some equipment that are everybody used to start with 15 years ago. And, you know, when I talk to the yard guys and, you know, they're doing the Flintstone braking system, putting their feet down through the floorboards and stop the car because everything's rusted out.
Yeah, that brown pickup that Charlie drives.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I don't think that should be going on the road.
Yeah. And I'm not promoting that we go buy new pickup trucks, but we may be at that point where we need to buy one or two this year and maybe one or two next year and just start replacing the fleet. But again, even a good used one, we're talking 10, 12 grand, you know, for a decent small pickup truck that has the ability to do the work that we have. So, but that's what I'm expecting. I told the supervisor that's what I need from them. You know, we've got a good list of what they really need. You know, we got straps we normally buy for the heavy haul out. That's $5,000. And that's one of those things. Could we eke out another year? Probably. But are we willing to take the liability risk of having a strap break? When you got a $4 million boat in the straps, you know. All right. Anything else you guys want from staff? This was just kind of a tee everything up meeting, and we'll start bringing your data. And we'll need decisions here over the next 2 months because we really want to get that draft put together in September. Yeah, feel free to call me or send me an email or call Abby and Jim to, if you got to think of something that we didn't cover today and need something.
Okay, well, is there anything else? Anybody want to say anything from out in the audience? Alrighty then. Well,
how come Bill's not here for talking a little about the airport?
Oh, I don't know.
Is he on vacation or what?
I don't know. Yeah, George?
I was just going to say thank you very much for good work on the bonds. It does demonstrate that 20 years of sound accounting pays off, and you should be proud of that. However, that's only one part of the financial picture. And I liken it to that the ports are not alone on this. The cities are doing the same thing. chasing pots of gold, and you see it, and you get a little snippet of it, but there's a cost associated with that, and that's the service, the debt service that goes with it. We've already used up all the taxpayers' dollars, and so where does the rest of that come from? And if we're looking at the yard, the haul-out, the moorage, the airport, do they pay their freight? And you, somewhere you're going to have to, in your long-range system of rates, figure out a way that you can recover some of those costs. Otherwise, and I've said it before, it's debt. What is it? It's cash flow. The issue is cash flow. So think about that, and thanks again for your great work.
Thank you, George.
Yeah, the former Port Commissioner here said the amount of dollars you had, the velocity of the dollars that you have.
Velocity,
yeah,
velocity.
How fast it's flying out the door.
Keep the dollars turning over. But I just thought of one more bullet I wanted to ask. We usually have the county assessor come down at some point just to give us his thoughts on what property tax is going to look like. With the county, you want to do that again? Or
her thoughts. Her thoughts.
No,
that's Chapman.
Oh, excuse me.
She's the treasurer. We invite her too to have her thoughts, but she doesn't influence anything.
Yeah, I find that a useful exercise, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
Which meeting is that normally? Or workshop?
Later in the, like August, I think, or September.
September. Yeah, because he needs to get well into the year to get a feel for how many new homes have come on the market and been built and that sort of thing.
Okay, well, that's it. Then we'll wrap this meeting up. We'll adjourn and until this afternoon.
Sit down with Pete separately.